Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, Tom, Sarah, Roger, and Kiki. Patrick here. Unfortunately, I'm still off the show. I apologize. I will be back next week for E3. But I did want to send a quick message about the Apple sign-in feature that was announced at WWDC. Sign-in with Apple, which is going to be in competition with sign-in with Google, Facebook, and everything. You know what it's about. I just wanted to mention that I think it is the biggest announcement of the conference. It solidifies Apple as a company that sells essentially data privacy protection as much as anything else, or maybe not as much, but in large part. And I think this is massive. No other company has the weight and power to offer that kind of alternative. And I think it's a really big deal. I would have loved to be there to talk about it more yesterday or even today. But alas, that's going to have to do for me. Love you all. I miss you. And I'll be back soon.
We miss you too, Patrick Beja. This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, June 4th, 2019 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Yes, indeed, Edu. It is time for some tech news, and we have got some cool stuff. We're going to follow up with some Apple clarifications, things that always come out after they do their keynotes. But Dr. Kiki from This Week in Science is also here. Dr. Kiki, what are you going to tell us about?
I'm talking about fingers.
Fingers.
And robots.
Yeah. So it's a digital story.
It's a digital story. Brains and robots and fingers. There we go.
I cannot wait to hear more about this. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Enhanced tracking protection, which blocks cookies from a blacklist of thousands of third-party trackers, is now on by default in new installations of Firefox. It'll become the default for existing users in the coming months as well. Mozilla also announced improvements to its Facebook container extension and released a Firefox desktop extension for its password keeper, which is now called Lockwise, formerly called Lockbox.
The leader of the U.S. House of Representatives Antitrust Subcommittee, Representative David Cicilline, announced a probe of tech companies to determine if they stifle competition and harm consumers. Seems to be a popular thing to say these days.
Amazon users on Android in the U.S. and Japan can now digitally try out different shades of lipstick using live mode on their front-facing camera. An iOS version is slated for launch later this year. Live mode uses AI-powered data from brands and images and descriptions aggregated from social media. It's powered by ModiFace, which L'Oreal bought last year.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Tim Cook and his reaction to all this stuff about antitrust investigations in response to the report that the Department of Justice has now taken jurisdiction to investigate not just Apple, but Google, Facebook, Google as well. And Tim Cook told CBS News, "With size, I think scrutiny is fair. I think we should be scrutinized. But if you look at any kind of measure about is Apple a monopoly or not, I don't think anybody reasonable is going to come to the conclusion that Apple's a monopoly." Following a Supreme Court decision that developers had standing to sue Apple over the App Store, California app developer Donald R. Cameron and Illinois' Pure Sweat Basketball have alleged in federal court in San Jose, California, that Apple's App Store is in fact, anti-competitive. So Tim Cook saying we're not. People are now going to court to say you are, and it looks like there's going to be an investigation. We just heard about a congressional investigation of tech companies in general. So this will be a story for a while.
Yeah, Tim Cook is going to say this whether or not anybody at Apple thinks that Apple might be a monopoly. So that's it's not a surprising quote, and it's not really all that interesting anyway. But I think what the courts have granted developers to move forward with is going to be interesting.
Yeah, Dr. Kiki, do you have any thoughts on whether you consider Apple anti-competitive or not?
Well, I mean, I think it's debatable. All these really large companies, they control multiple markets. And, you know, it's arguable that Apple has to control its marketplace. It has to control its software. It has to control the apps and the hardware to be able to maintain the Appleness of its product. But then again, you know, could it all be split apart and could that be maintained? So all of these Google, Facebook, Apple, these walled gardens, the walls either need to come down and we need to bring them down on all of them, or we're just going to have to let them keep going. Mm.
The Hamilton Public Library in Hamilton, Ontario, has joined the Internet Archive's Open Libraries program. The program uses controlled digital lending, or CDL, to make digital copies of almost 1 million print texts available worldwide. Libraries can't lend more than the number of physical copies that they hold, and restrictions also prevent copying or redistribution. Otherwise, very cool.
Yeah, I think this is interesting. I had not heard about controlled digital lending. Archive.org has so many projects going on. It's not surprising. But the idea behind this is that if you want to lend out a copy of a book, but that person can't get the physical copy, maybe the interlibrary loan doesn't work for this particular person, there's no reason you shouldn't be able to scan a digital version of it and make it available to anyone who has an internet connection worldwide. The idea is that once that has happened, you can't give it to anybody else. So you're trying to fend off any kind of exploitation of this for copyright infringement. And when you join CDL, Archive will look at your entire collection as a library and tell you which texts they already have scanned in. So you don't even have to scan those. You can just, you know, authenticate that you have those and only scan the ones that nobody else in the system had.
Yeah, it's exciting. I think moving forward, this is going to allow interlibrary lending, allow much greater movement of works around the world and greater information sharing.
Yeah. And if people don't know, you know, the knee-jerk reaction might be like, well, this will get squashed. But libraries and digital content have been working very well. Yeah. Check your local library and find out what apps they have, because they probably have one that allow you to check out audiobooks and ebooks and things, and even movies and TV shows.
Yeah. There's also, yeah, I checked out my local library branch recently. It's right down the street from me. It's real nice. And they don't kick you out. They don't make you order coffee if you want to use the Wi-Fi. It's a lovely co-working space. And sure, your library may vary. But yeah, the libraries are thriving. And they've got a lot of great resources for the community.
And yeah, librarians have been working on this, information on information sciences for years, and how do we maintain copyrights? This is something that is crucial to library sciences and to literature and information sharing moving forward.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Hoopla app that the LA Public Library uses right now, and I can get RBG or Pokemon the first movie. I could watch them right on my phone right now with my library card. Spotify Stations is now available in the United States after launching on iOS in Australia last month and on Android in Australia last year. The lightweight app offers easy access to curated playlists with a more radio-like experience rather than your customized libraries and playlists. So users can personalize stations by selecting a favorite artist, say, but you can't pick every song that goes in them. A favorites playlist based on the user's interest also exists in the app. It's very similar to the way Pandora was for years in its early days. Free users of stations will hear ads and can't skip tracks, but if you're a Spotify Premium user, you get unlimited skips and ad-free listening. Over in the main Spotify app, 5 curated playlists of podcast episodes are going to start showing up for about 5% of the users in Argentina, Canada, Chile, Colombia, Mexico, Sweden, the US, and the UK. Themes of the list include comedy, true crime, geek culture, walking, motivational, so I guess it's stuff to listen to while you're walking, and relaxing or mindfulness. A couple things going on here. One is sort of the lightweight app where you're like, I don't want to make choices, or I don't have a phone that has a lot of storage on it, and I want to be able to listen to Spotify stuff. And the other one is good for us, you know, trying to get more people into podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not a Spotify user, but I am an Apple Music user. And I often will just hit the radio button because it's like, just, you know, give me a genre that I like, because I am a radio user. I like the element of surprise, and I'm not so good about downloading a bunch of albums and keeping up on all of that and curating my own playlists. So I can see why Spotify is like, why not? You know, you're going to hear ads if you're a free user, just like you would be on regular Spotify. Give folks another option if for some reason the full app is a little bit overwhelming. And yeah, as far as podcast themed playlists, I love this. I want to know what geek culture is that Spotify considers geek culture.
I know what I consider it to be, but yeah, right, I'm curious, sure. Spotify thinks it is.
But often these sorts of things are either a little hit and miss, but I will find something that I wouldn't have found otherwise, and I'm happy to know about it. I also like walking, so motivation is good too.
Yeah, especially if it motivates you to walk.
But Spotify is now has opened up its own podcasting platform, mm-hmm. and is probably going to be having its own specially featured mm-hmm. podcast. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, who will these curated lists be made up of? Like you are, Sarah. I mean, are they pay for play? Are they podcasts that Spotify employees just really like? How do you get into these lists? And seriously, is a motivational walking podcast like, you can do it, just take one more step, keep
I
walking.
I don't know if it's about walking.
You can
That's a really
go
good question.
Under that yeah. tree.
It might just be something that's got a good beat, you know, so you're power walking, yeah. you know, like yeah. like a robot
you
along,
are great
along
and
with it.
You can do it and keep on going.
There we go.
And Spotify has
turned into a walking podcast.
Spotify yeah. has acquired some original content companies, yeah. Gimlet Media being yep. one of them. So mm-hmm. one would think these will be prominently featured. But yep. as somebody who's always been trying to get Apple to pay attention to my podcast over the years with varying results, mm-hmm. I know that, yeah, that sort of curated editor's pick stuff can be a little confusing for the rest of us.
Well, folks, if you get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, that means you're subscribed to DailyTechHeadlines.com, and it's working. If you're like, wait, I don't get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, well, by goodness, go over to DailyTechHeadlines.com and take care of that right now. All right, we're going to do a lightning round of Apple aftershocks, things that came out after the WWDC keynote yesterday, starting with iOS developer Steve Moser noting that 9to5 Mac confirming that the first beta of iOS 13 includes an asset package used for pairing devices by proximity, similar to how AirPods and HomePods work. The product type, though, is Tag 1,1. Sounds like a tile type system. Another asset found in the beta shows a mock-up of a white circle with a blue border around it, matching the description of Bluetooth tags that Apple is said to be developing to work with its Find My app. So Apple might be coming up with its own version of tile.
Well, I don't know. I've mentioned on a previous show that I no longer use a tile for more than kind of a paperweight that's part of my keychain. However, I know that there are many people who love this feature, and if you want to keep track of your stuff, keys or otherwise, then it makes sense based on what we heard yesterday that Apple would be doing this.
Yeah. Lightning round. Kiki, what do you think? Yes, no, I don't care.
I don't really care.
Fair enough. Moving on.
Fair enough. We all have opinions. Ars Technica got the official word from Apple that iTunes for Windows will continue to work and be supported just like it is now. We wondered about this yesterday. Apple didn't say what would happen to it in the future, however, but for now, it sounds like it's going along. Also, Apple Music and macOS Catalina will access existing music libraries, including rips from CDs and MP3s and things added from other sources, along with your iTunes purchases. And non-iTunes files can continue to be synced to the cloud.
Yeah, I call this story, everyone calm down. It's going to be just fine.
Good advice.
Developer Steve Troughton Smith notes that in iPad OS, you can plug in a USB mouse and it works with an assistive touch feature. There does seem to be a Bluetooth device section in the pointing devices settings as well, but that has not been confirmed to work yet, so don't get too excited about Bluetooth mice with your iPad. But it looks like with iPad OS, when it comes out, you'll be able to plug in a mouse on your iPad, which we never thought they'd
work. Thumb drives, mice, it's a whole new world.
Right. It's like almost like a little computer.
Almost, not quite.
Well, it's funny, too, because my first reaction was like, would I want a mouse? And the answer is, yeah, I'm just so used to not being able to use it that way. Now I'm wondering why I would use it that way.
I know they're doing some windows, but if they could do like almost an infinite number of windows overlapping on the screen that I could move around with that mouse, that would be something.
I'm imagining it using it as a teleprompter, right? Mm. If you had a mouse right next to you, you could just scroll
right
through.
I actually use mine as a teleprompter.
Yeah.
Mm. Would it be better with a mouse?
I don't know about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we can try it out when the version is available. Mm-hmm. Developer Ben Sandofsky notes that in its updated App Store review guidelines, Apple writes, quote, sign-in with Apple will be available for beta testing this summer. It will be required as an option for users and apps that support third-party sign-in when it's commercially available later this year. Seems to imply that if you use Google or Facebook sign-in, you will also be required to offer Apple sign-in if you want to be in the App Store.
Oh, boy. You remember those stories about anti-competitive behavior? I'm not saying this is a clear example of anti-competitive behavior, but you can be sure developers are going to be upset about this and complain that this is anti-competitive behavior because they won't want to have to implement this if they don't want to implement it.
Well, I mean, is that anti-competitive, though? It's offering another option that Apple has laid out as a for many people, better option. Well, it's forcing the developer to offer it. It's not forcing me as a user to use it.
Well, no, but they're saying to a developer, if you want to be in the App Store and you want to offer a competitor sign-in, you also have to offer our sign-in.
We want to compete. We want to play.
I think Apple may have a point that the way that it's sign-in works is so different than at least Facebook and Google, to use two other examples, that it's that it has a point.
Well,
but I see what you're saying.
Yeah, what I'm saying is I can choose to not use anybody else's sign-in and run it myself, and I don't have to do Apple sign-in. It's only, according to this, if I'm using Google or Facebook sign-in, that then I have to use Apple sign-in. I don't get a choice if I decide to use anybody third-party. That's
weird. And isn't this being argued as a, hey, well, if you want to stay within the privacy of our system and not be snooped on by other outside interests, and that's great.
Oh, that's definitely what Apple's doing.
Yeah, our Apple users want this. Mm-hmm.
Apple also added a line that in limited cases, companies using multiple device management or MDM for parental controls may not sell, use, or disclose to third parties any data for any purpose and must commit to this in their privacy policy. If you missed it, they said, you can use MDM for parental controls. Made a big deal of how MDM shouldn't be used for parental controls, which I found reasonable. And now they're saying, okay, well, as long as you abide by these rules, we'll go ahead and soften that. Apple was previously restricting companies who were criticizing them for anti-competitive behavior for doing that. So it seems like they had a little change of heart there.
Well, like Tim Cook said, nobody would think that we're a monopoly if they're reasonable. Yeah. We're not anti-competitive. Come on. Last week, Apple raised the limit for app downloads on cellular connections to 200 megabytes. This is a leftover from when mobile carriers were worried about data congestion and all the plans had data download limits. 9to5 Mac reports that iOS 13 beta shows a card warning a download is over the limit if you're on cellular, but you can download it anyway if you want to. There's also a setting to just always allow downloads no matter the size.
Oh, that's nice. Giving me a choice. I like that. And of course, with every new OS release, there will be some hardware that can't support it, and the list of hardware that will not get iOS 13 is as follows: iPhone 5S, iPhone 6, iPhone 6 Plus, iPad Air, iPad Mini 2, and iPad Mini 3. Engadget notes that means that the iPhone SE, the 6S, and the 6S Plus are now the oldest devices to support iOS 13. All right, that's our Apple lightning round. Hope you feel more well-informed about some of the things that weren't in the WWDC keynote. And now, Dr. Kiki has brought us a story about how the six-fingered man from Princess Bride has paved the way to let us control robotic limbs with our thoughts. Is that, do I have that right?
I think you've got the general idea there. Yes. So it's not necessarily a story about the six-fingered man, but researchers have been trying to figure out how people born with extra fingers actually move those extra fingers. What parts of their brain are involved in that extra processing? And does that extra processing actually create a load on the brain and what it's achieving with motions of the body? And the end goal here is maybe we can use the information gained from figuring out how polydactyl people actually use their brains to move their limbs to help people use extra limbs that are artificial. So robotic limbs, potentially. Could surgeons be more easily trained to use robotic arms? Could astronauts be trained to use extra limbs as well for missions? And would understanding how the brains of people who are born with more digits help us do that? It's really exciting. So the question, according to the researchers who just published in Nature this week, they said, even though we've known about polydactyly in people and cats, and you might know your six-fingered orange cats, but people also are born with more than five digits on their fingers and toes at times. But nobody has ever looked into whether or not it's muscle or nerve inputs from the surrounding digits that control that sixth digit, or if there's actual brain input coming in to control number six. And so the researchers looked at people tying their shoes, working keyboards, doing all sorts of tasks with their six-digited hands. And in the case of tying shoes, they could tie their shoes one-handed. So there's even a manipulation benefit to having extra fingers.
I found this fascinating because part of the story was about how it's hard to find people with polydactylism because it's usually corrected, quote unquote, because people see it as a birth defect. And so they found a woman and her son who both had an extra finger between the thumb and forefinger, and they could do things like tie their shoes with one hand.
Tie their shoes one-handed. And we were talking about, we're talking about devices and our screens. Is there the possibility that with six fingers, you have more control over your iOS device?
Pinch to zoom. Any six-fingered gestures? Oh, there's not very many people going to be able to do
this. There's got to be some advantages. Now, I know with polydactyl cats, which is fairly common, it's almost always symmetrical. You know, if you're polydactyl, it's both paws.
Yep.
With humans, that's not the case, right?
I think it depends. There are different ways that it can be expressed. If it is expressed in a basic gene mutation that is part of the symmetrical development of the person, then yes, it's on
both
sides.
Then it would be both.
Yeah. If it's a mutation that only occurs on later in development, then you're going to get it only on one side or the other.
Because it'd be really interesting to have somebody who, again, if it was not corrected and it was only on one side, to explain, this is what I can do with the extra digit that I can't do on the other hand, you know, because you've got something to test against.
And to get back to what I think the technology aspects of this article is, they identified, Kiki, if I have this right, they identified the part of the brain that gets devoted to this extra digit. And because of that, they're like, oh, well, that's kind of flexible up there. If you have an extra digit, you just use a part of your brain that would be used for other things otherwise, maybe other digits. And so maybe we can figure out how to do that in people who don't have extra fingers or extra toes to control something else. That's when you get the Doc Ock situation.
Exactly.
Where you're controlling these external things to you. So you could have, like you said, a doctor with a third robotic arm to assist in the surgery that he wouldn't have to talk to. He could just control it himself or herself.
Yeah. And if we're talking, the future of brain control interfaces, if you just have to imagine it in your brain, you know, it would make the reality of it so much simpler. And so in our brain, the motor cortex, when we lose limbs, we know that the parts of the brain that used to control those parts of the body do start to get encroached upon by other areas. Our brains never want to just let brain tissue go fallow. Our brain is always trying to maximize its use of space. And so the amount of nervous tissue that is there for your fingers then is going to get allotted up based on how many fingers you have. And so the question is, if you're learning something since birth, what is the difference between mm-hmm. you and somebody who wants to put on artificial limbs as an adult? Can you start to approach the brain tissue allotment in the same way?
So that's the trick. That's the thing they haven't figured out. That was not in the study of Nature Communications, which is, can we shoehorn an extra limb into your brain, into your brain control?
Yeah. And I imagine that if you were to, to practice often enough, it would be like learning to play the piano, learning to drive a car, mm-hmm. learning to use a pen, a pencil, any device. It would be a tool, and your brain will create pathways to make the use of that tool easier and easier over time. And so, I don't know, would you have to put on those artificial limbs and never take them off? Would it be something that,
could
take them off and put them down and your brain goes, okay, that's awesome. I'll save that space for later. There'll be some really interesting questions. I mean, our brains are very plastic.
To wash it.
Right. You would need to wash it at some point. Your brain, that is.
The extra limb and the brain. I wonder if it's sort of like trying to teach yourself to write with the opposite hand, right? If you grew up left-handed, mm-hmm. trying to write right-handed.
Exactly.
Is it going to be like that, or is it something even weirder or harder?
And we always say, if you'd learn to play the piano or ride a bike or lots mm-hmm. of things, or learn a language at a younger age, you have the advantage because you've got so much more absorption potential in your brain than when you get older and it's harder to adopt these things. But then you've got situations where, I know somebody who had a stroke. He was a very accomplished artist and his right side wasn't really working anymore. And now he draws with his left. Still really talented. It's just different. So I wonder, in those sorts of situations where you almost have an opportunity to be able to adopt some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or the people who relearn to talk by imagining themselves singing.
Or that. Yeah. Yeah.
All
yeah.
kinds of weird brain hacks.
Yeah. All of it though. I mean, it'll be a massive learning curve as we're seeing with all the brain control interfaces that are coming up in research. It's none of them are easy to take on, and something that would be an extra limb that control would be kind of tough to make fine tuned.
Well, something we like to consider our extra limb is our subreddit. Mm-hmm. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Another limb that we love very much is our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow.
They're like two extra lobes of our brain.
It's true. Yeah. Just feeding good information every day.
All right. Let's check out another lobe of our brain, the mailbag.
Daniel Nass in Cincinnati was at the mall recently. He said, I was at the food court in Kenwood Mall on Saturday in Cincinnati, and I discovered this kiosk. He also sent us a picture of the kiosk, which is an Uber kiosk. Daniel says, apparently Uber's trying to get new drivers in my area. Looks like an automated system you walk up to and automatically get connected to a recruiter at Uber. When I took the picture of the kiosk, a nice man sitting over to the right off camera stood up and asked if I had questions or if I ever had thought about driving for Uber. He said they have about 20-ish kiosks around the nation in malls trying to recruit more drivers. So his job was to get somebody excited enough to pick up the phone at the kiosk. Then an Uber recruiter would come on the screen and talk to you about driving for Uber and potentially fill out an application right then and there.
This is why I am not concerned that automation in the long term will wipe out all jobs. I'm not saying it won't disrupt things and there won't be problems, and there are, and we've talked about that. But look at this. Like, instead of being like, oh, we'll just put up a kiosk and that'll be it, they're like, no, we really need somebody there.
Standing there. Yeah.
To kind of help explain kind of it like to you.
And, waiting for you to get interested enough. See, I haven't been to I don't know. I was in an open air mall recently, but I have not seen one of these kiosks, and I'm not sure how close the nearest one is to me, but it would, yeah, I would love to witness somebody being like, oh, cool. This is exactly what I've been meaning to do. And here's this kiosk. And now it's like, very convenient for me.
Well, and instead of having to get all of your experts on talking to people about driving and spread them out to malls around the country, you have them all in one room in San Francisco, is my guess.
Yeah.
And then you.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Can hire people who don't have that specialty to stand around by the kiosks and help people understand and do the kiosk to make the connection.
It's that personal connection.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the email, Daniel, and thanks to everybody who emails us every single day. And also, thanks to Dr. Kiki Sanford for being with us on the show. So good to have you. Let folks know where they can keep up with your fabulous work.
Thank you for having me on the show again. You can find my work. This Week in Science is my podcast. You can find it at twistwis.org. And you can follow me on Twitter at Dr. Kiki, D-R-K-I-K-I.
Don't forget, folks, our goal each month is one more patron than last month. You could be the person that puts us over the top by becoming a member and getting access to all kinds of cool extra content as a member of patreon.com/DTNS. And if you'd like to join in live, one of the perks of being a patron is getting in the Discord, and you can listen in on the Good Day Internet channel as we record. You can also watch live at twitch.tv/Good Day Internet.
Our email address is feedback@DailyTechNewsShow. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Scott Johnson. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.